I know Dean's on.
Dean's on.
I thought he wasn't going to be on.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Keep me on point. Trying to remember. We have talking point for recreation.
Cool. Okay, we'll start this meeting to order at 3:30. Roll call.
Hoffman.
Present.
Commissioner Maurice Roberts.
Present.
Commissioner Kathy Don. He's going to join in system. Vice Chair Manon Getsy.
Present. And can you turn it up just a tad for the folks in the peanut gallery?
How's that? Not yet.
A little more. Best team, 1, 2, 3. Can you hear us?
That's better. Thank you.
And Chair Becky Quintero.
Present.
Okay, we have four board members, and we have farm.
Is Kathy?
Kathy. So can I have a motion to approve the minutes as read?
So I'll second the motion. I'll make the motion to approve the minutes.
I'll second it.
Okay. Roll call.
Kathy Altman.
Yes.
Maurice Roberts.
Yes.
Kathy Don.
Minutes approval. Yes, thank you.
And Manon Getsy.
Aye.
Becky Quintero.
Aye.
Okay, motion passes.
Thank you. At this time, we have call to the audience. Any member of the public is allowed to address the committee. Speakers are limited to 3-minute presentations pursuant to Arizona open meeting law. Individual committee members may ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda item or respond to criticism made by speakers. However, the committee may not discuss or take legal action on matters raised during call to the audience. We have Judy Bohm.
Hi.
Did I say your name right?
It's Bohm.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Where do I go? Yeah, it's fine. If you want to go like to the end there, that's perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. Can I pass out my speech and the 80 petitions?
I'll grab them. Mr. Baptist. Happily signed.
Mr.
Baptist.
Happily signed.
Nice to be met.
Thank you. I think I'm too short. I am happy to make more. Ready? My name is Judy Bohm. I'm here to ask you, the members of the Parks and Recreation Commission, to do everything in your power to reinstate Sundays at the Armory Parks Center Senior Center. This center is so important to the well-being of 50 and older senior members. It gives us a place of camaraderie, a place to seek advice, a place of many activities. Also, importantly, in Tucson's hot summer, a place to rest with air conditioning. Most of the other centers have members who are young. The Armory is made up of a mandatory over 50 years of age membership. We should be considered in a different category than the other centers. The Armory has been used to be open 7 days a week, and it was free. Back then, my generation honored those seniors who are now gone but not forgotten. Those seniors were respected and cherished for being wise and their longevity. The seniors received privileges for being old. They were treated like first-class citizens, not the way I feel I'm being treated like a second-class citizen or like I don't even matter. Is there no longer respect for elders? Now it seems the seniors' most venerable population are being suppressed. I realize that finances are the main issue here, but the Armory can pay for itself and generate income for the city. The ballroom has the biggest wood floor in town. It has been rented out for birthday parties, quinceañeras, graduations, health seminars, anniversaries, and other money-making endeavors. The smaller all-purpose room is also rented out often, and it generates income. Ballroom dancers appreciate the new beautiful ballroom floor. We waited over a year for the floor after the play. We put on a grand opening and invited the mayor, all the city council members, and Parks and Rec elite. Not only did no one show up, we were informed the same week that Saturdays were being eliminated. We were devastated. We are still devastated. We've had to move to Thursdays. We've tried to make it work, but it's not working. Our dance members have dwindled and soon will be forced to disband. That after I've danced at the Armory for 22 years. Ballroom dancing has been going on at the Armory for 50 years. It is not just the dancers that need the Saturdays at the Armory. Many senior members frequent the Armory for activities and relaxation on Saturdays. And the saddest injustice that has occurred from closing Saturdays is losing the Tucson Philharmonic Youth Orchestra. The director, Suzette Batan, has conducted this nationally recognized group for 36 years. this first and only Arizona orchestra to present a concert at the historically famed New York Carnegie Hall. They have won many accolades. The Young Youth Orchestra has over 90 musicians. They always used to practice at the Armory on Saturdays. I'm here to implore the Parks and Rec to reopen the Armory Parks Seniors on Saturdays. We are seniors. We're old. We paid our dues all our long lives. We want to spend our remaining days with as much dignity and respect as we can muster. It's hard to be a senior. We are having many aches and pains. We're wrinkled. We're losing our hair. We're losing our friends and families. We've already lost our Sundays. Please reinstate Saturdays to the Armory Park Senior Center.
Yay.
Thank you.
Robin? Aww. Mercado?
Why not? I have no idea if Judy was speaking, but it just makes me so happy because you can't talk about Armory and the seniors without crying. Because it's so important and the work that they do is so important. So thank you for being here, Judy, and it's great to see you. And I remember as I was started being cut Sundays, and so we used to be 5 live dances a week, and now they're down to a minimal. And I hope that that is something that will be looked at. And it speaks to exactly why I'm here. I thought it was going to be on the agenda, so I was not going to use these 3 minutes, but the senior nutrition programs are not on the agenda. So I will again ask and ask one of the commissioners to put that on the agenda so we can talk about the Older Americans Act, Title III funding. The city is a contractor, has been a contractor for over 40 years. As a contractor, you can demand to know where those funds are. Where are the older adult, in the Older Americans Act, the Title III congregate meal funding? Because when the programs were stopped, that funding was still available. So I just want to say, show me the money. Number 3, Silver Lake Park. Again, I thought that was going to be on the agenda to discuss where it is to rename it to Jerry Neely Park. I was at Quincy Douglas this weekend for their another community event, their egg hunt, and it was absolutely amazing. Over 2,500 people is what TPD told me. I go by their numbers. 7,000 eggs. I was there in volunteering. So we're stuffing 7,000 eggs, all volunteer. That is, again, a sample of most exceptional best practices where volunteers and collaboration bring community together to run great events. And I want to commend them. And their continued community collaborations, just crazy great music for the community. And honestly, I think that that center should probably be looked at for best practices because it's that collaboration with community, like what Judy was talking about with the Philharmonic Orchestra, the youth programs. That's what we're in this for. Those are prevention programs, the mariachi groups, the folkloric groups, the Philharmonic. These children, these young people are brilliant. And this is where they should have the opportunity to have these activities in community centers. I'm just so sad that we're losing this. We're losing that strength of who we are and what we do for the community, I feel personally. So you haven't cut me off, but
about 23 minutes.
Sorry, I'm just really making a case. I'm a little tired today.
On the agenda, hopefully, and Older Americans Act. Thank you. Thank you, Judy. I'm glad you're done.
Next, we have the Loma Verde Park Alamo Washburn Way discussion.
Yes.
So, new phase, new department.
New department.
Yeah. So my name is Colin Cheston, and I'm a senior project manager with the Department of Transportation and Mobility. And I am the project manager for the Alamo Wash Greenway, which has some potential impacts to Loma Verde Park. And I think I presented one other time at this commission just to give you a sense of what was going on with that project. And I'm here to just give an update and fill you in on what we've been up to since I last was here. So we've spent about the past 9 months doing an alternatives analysis, not only for the Loma Verde Park segment, but for the entire project, which is 9 miles long. So that was fairly intensive and involved a lot of analysis of different kinds. I won't get into, you know, the depth of any of that today. I'll just focus on the Loma Verde Park impacts, which I think is what you're most interested in. But if you have any questions about any of the other parts of the project, feel free to raise those questions. We recently presented our what we're calling the preferred alternative to the Proposition 407 Parks and Connections Oversight Commission. They are a separate commission that is dealing specifically with the implementation of all of our Parks and Connections projects that was passed in 2018 as a part of Proposition 407. So the recommendation that we provided to that commission was to move forward with a 10-foot wide shared use path in Loma Verde Park. There are a few reasons for that recommendation. The first is it's what the voters approved. So it's what was listed as the project in Proposition 407, and it was shown on a map showing a path in the park. So there's a process we use if we want to deviate from what we promised the voters we would do. So there's a set of criteria. None of the alternatives perform very well on those metrics that the commission has established. We think that it's going to provide the best user experience for people walking and biking. And it's the staff's opinion that the shared use path is a complementary use in the park, and that we think we can design around some of the questions and concerns that some folks in the neighborhood raised related to a few issues. And I think the primary issues that the neighbors had was impacts to the turf. They really valued the green space. And so the idea of, you know, taking 10% of the park to build a shared use path and eliminate some of the green space, they didn't love that idea. So I think what we've tried to do is demonstrate that we can build the path, avoid the mature trees, try to minimize the impacts to the turf as best we can. There may be some tweaks and changes to the disc golf course. There's a disc golf course in the park, and it's well used. And I don't know if you know how that works, but there's little concrete pads where folks, you know, start and throw the discs, and then there are holes, which consist of these kind of tiered metal baskets. And so they, you know, they throw the discs. And so we just want to make sure there aren't any conflicts between people throwing discs and people out there walking and biking on the path. So that's something we've got to figure out. But we think all these problems are solvable. So that's where we are in terms of the staff recommendation. However, what I do want to share is that based on some of the feedback from the neighbors who wanted to minimize impacts to the park, we did develop two different alternative options, which are not the official staff recommendation, but the Prop 407 Commission, if they so choose, could direct us to proceed with one of those two options. I'll briefly describe them to you all so that you're in the loop, and then if you want to see them, I can put them up on the screen. So the first option is, instead of having that 10-foot wide shared use path through the entire park, we could instead do a 5-foot sidewalk in some areas and then have what's called a bicycle boulevard on the adjacent streets that, you know, are right next to the park. So, of course, our Greenway project is intending to accommodate both people walking and people biking. So the bicyclists could be on the bicycle boulevard, which would be in the street, and then the pedestrians could use the 5-foot wide sidewalk. In all the options, there's one part of the park on the southwest corner where the street network does not connect. And so in that area, we don't really have a choice. We need to build the 10-foot wide shared use path in that area. The good news is that part of the park is mostly gravel, and so there are almost no turf impacts in that area. So the first alternative was the sidewalks. The second alternative would be basically to not do anything in the park outside of the area that I just described where the street network does not connect. And people would just need to either walk in the grass in the park, or they would need to walk in the street on Chantilly Drive. Yeah, I see the face you're making. That was my response. Yeah. Yeah, so staff doesn't think that's the greatest idea, you know, for a couple reasons. You know, we think for pedestrians, they should have a place to walk that's not in the street. And we'd like for the pedestrian facility to be accessible to all, you know, people of all ages and abilities. So if you're in a wheelchair, you're using a walker, you have a wheeled mobility device of some sort, or even if you're just pushing a stroller, it's a nice thing to have a paved surface to walk on. However, the neighbors were really adamant, some of them, and it's a small group of folks, and I don't think it's unanimous, but we just want to be as responsive as we can to those folks. And so those options are on the table for the 407 Commission to consider. I do have a visual. Yeah. You all want to see it? Yeah.
It'll be easier to understand.
Yes, it will be easier to understand. I never know how deep people want to get, you know. But I came prepared.
Is that weed?
Weed.
Getting
in the weeds. Y'all are in the weeds.
I want to make sure I heard that right.
Okay, so this is really small. I'm going to zoom and pan in a second here. But
thank you. I have very old eyes.
Yeah, and it's tiny, so yeah, it'll be tough to see. So this is the first option. This is the staff recommendation, and it's the shared use path. So I'm going to start up here close to Broadway. And you can see, oh, and by the way, none of these are designs. These are conceptual illustrations that are intended to look at, if we were to do one of these options, how might it impact the park? So don't take any of this literally, and I told the other commission the same thing. This is an exploration, in part because the neighbors were saying, well, there's no way you're going to be able, it won't fit. You're going to have tree impacts, and so anyway, that's my preface about the not taking it literally. So you can see the park here. This is the narrowest point. It's about 78 feet wide here, and so 10 feet of that would be a shared use path. This is the street here where my cursor is. This is Chantilly Drive. So it's a narrow street. It's about 20 feet wide. There's some existing traffic calming on it. So it's not a busy street. Cars aren't going that fast, and that's part of the reason why, you know, we could look at doing a bicycle boulevard. So it widens out here. This is a more typical width for the park, about 100 feet wide. So you can see, you know, it would take up some space, but there's still a lot of green space left over in this area. This is an area where the neighbors did have some questions and concerns about how it would interact with the playground. And their sentiment was, it's not just the playground structure that's formalized. It's also the grass around the playground where there are little kids running around. And so there were some questions and concerns about, isn't that dangerous to have somebody riding a bike next to the playground? The staff response to that was, no, we don't experience that. That's not feedback that we get. Serious injuries and fatalities are very rare in these kinds of contexts because people are moving at slow speeds and they're generally respectful of each other.
May I ask a question? It's not. Oh, thank you, Chair. In this circumstance, is there a reason not to continue straight? Is there an obstruction that keeps you from moving it straight through without wrapping around the playground?
Yes.
Okay.
This right here between the playground and this parking area is not wide enough to accommodate a 10-foot wide shared use path without some more significant modifications. It is theoretically possible. And so that's one thing that we could look at in the future. It would probably involve moving a couple of signs, potentially redoing some of the parking area. So you can see what we're trying to do here moving through the park is avoid, there's some large eucalyptus trees. In practice, the path here may need to actually be pushed out a little bit further to the east or to the right to avoid the roots of those trees. So that's one thing we heard, and once we get into design, we could make those modifications. This is the area in the southwest corner where, like, right about where this 16-foot label is, that's where the street terminates. So you can see there's no street here. So this is the area where the shared use path is really the only option. And you can see this is, it's hard to see in the aerial, but this is dirt and gravel, not turf in this area. It would go around this ball field here, curves around to avoid some trees. Is adjacent to the Abbey School here. Again, most of the turf is north of where the path would be in this location. This is one tree. It's about 6 to 7 feet tall, so it's not a mature Palo Verde, but if we were to maintain this alignment, which has less impacts to the turf, we would have to replace that tree. But I think that's the only impact for tree with this.
Thank you.
This idea. And then it continues to the east. Again, the reason for it moving around is to avoid impacts to the trees. There's a couple of utilities here, and then it would come around this way. So that's option one. Options two and three are, they're the same in the southwest corner, which you can see here. I'm going to go back to the southwest corner. So from this point where it connects to 14th Street, west along this edge of the park, and then up to here where it connects with Chantilly, there's still a shared use path. But you'll notice north of there and east of there, there's a 5-foot wide sidewalk instead of the path. And, you know, to your earlier question about why does the path do that weird thing where it goes around the playground, why couldn't it just go straight? With a sidewalk, we have enough space to do that pretty easily. So that would be one advantage of the sidewalk. And then you can see, because the sidewalk is not intended to accommodate the people biking, we have these markings on the street, which are called shared lane markings, and that's just intended to let drivers know, you know, there could be bikes here on the street, and it helps guide bicyclists through. So that's the second option. And then the third option, you can see those shared lane markings are still there in the street, but there's nothing in the park at all. And again, this is the one that, this wasn't staff's favorite option, but this is, I think, what the small group of Loma Verde neighbors said they liked the most. So this would involve having a ramp up from the street for the bikes and then having the shared use path in the southwest corner. Same alignment as the other two options. And then there would be a ramp down here at 14th Street so that the bikes could use the street. Oh, and there's some typical cross sections here if this helps you visualize what that could look like. So this is the top image is a bicycle boulevard. Pretty simple. Like I said, there's some existing speed humps out there and there's some shared lane markings. We typically drop the speed limit to 20 miles an hour, although when I presented this to the 407 Commission, some of the neighbors were here and they said, oh, it's actually already signed at 15. So if that's the case, we just keep it at 15. And then this is a cross section showing just a typical view. And again, the way this is drawn in a conceptual way, that's too close to the tree, right? That's impacting the root zone. So we'd need to move that over a little bit, but this gives you a sense of the general idea. Yeah, that's my update. And the 407 Commission is scheduled to make a decision about how they would like staff to proceed on April 20th at their next meeting.
Two questions. Between Park Place Drive and the outside and the inside of the park?
There is a wall, yes.
There is a wall there.
Yeah, it's a concrete block wall.
None. Hi, I have a question about what the path is going to be made of. Have we made any progress? Because even if you're kind of not on top of the root structures of eucalyptus, there's a lot more runoff if you put a path, and we're losing a lot of trees in our parks. Are any of these paths availability have some porousness that allows any kind of water to seep through or any of that kind of thing at this point?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say we're not that far yet. We haven't started design officially. We're still kind of in the planning stage, trying to understand the alignment and the facility type. In general, in the past, we haven't used those kinds of paths, not because we don't think it's a good idea. It is a good idea. I think what I've heard, the feedback that I've heard, and the technology could have advanced beyond my understanding. But what I've heard is that they get clogged up. So like mm-hmm. You can create, you know, the pavement that is porous and all the little dirt particles and rocks of it, over time, they get in there and it eventually becomes not porous anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, we could look into that to see what kind of options there are now. And I think, I don't know, maybe Greg or others have thoughts or ideas or have experience that I don't.
You know, it would be interesting to hear because this is the second park I've seen this, a similar scenario around putting a path in a park where a good chunk of the park was very vocal about not having the path and also being very concerned about them going over the root structures of eucalyptus trees. And in the future, it may not, there may not be as many of them around, but right now we need them. So, all right. I appreciate that. Thank you for the presentation.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Ms. Dong?
Well, you.
Ms. Dong.
And thank you, Ms. Quintero. Just as a thought and consideration for that option number one, and just as consideration, you know, I know that, that we always think about safety and we always think about, you know, our environment around us. When it comes to redirecting paths, the natural inclination for families and for parents is to put yourself between your children and possible danger. And so when you have a playground and there's a street, you're going to put yourself between the playground and the street. But then there's another path now you have to consider. So you're the proximity to safety, you know, as a parent, you have to make some considerations. And then it's different with like ballparks, because the directionality for a ballpark is to move away from a path that's behind a fence, you know, and the pit and the backstop. So just, you know, from that perspective, however safety needs to be considered, really put yourself in those shoes of the parents. And then potentially there might be additional like purposeful seating that needs to be moved so that parents know how to best support that safety, depending on what the commission decides for 407, to just be very thoughtful that whatever the path is, that you can guide safety in other ways, in addition to the way the path is laid out in signage and seating, and even refacing certain things. And so I just wanted to put that out there as a parent myself.
Thank you.
I agree. I didn't like that. Like path and the playground that close to each other. Balls fly, a bicycle gets in the way, and then tumbles. And I just, for safety's sake, for the children and the bicyclists, I don't like that. Portion of it, but that's just me. Maurice, you had a...
Yes. Okay, I think we have a multi-level question over here. You mentioned that the preferred choice of the local folks is nothing, and not for a path. Right? Okay, so I understood correctly. Okay. So Manu mentioned that she's worried about usage of material that would be detrimental to the existing trees. Anthony mentioned that, well, all of a sudden now you got the kids squeezed between a path and a road. Okay. And it so happens that I've had some feedback from the local folks that actually have come to me and said they felt totally abandoned. Okay. And they would like us to do something about it. Okay. Now, we're talking about a small park here. Okay. We're not talking about a huge park. We're talking about, you know, a little bit of green stuff that's behind a wall, okay, behind this huge asphalt desert, which is Park Place. So, at this point in time, my choice would be, let's make it pretty. Okay. Let's not go for, you know, path over here and path over there. You know, this is not going to be your bicycle hangout. Okay, there's not enough space for that. Okay. If people want to go bicycle, they go to the neighborhood. They're not going to come to the park. Plus the other reasons, like, you know, Kathy mentioned, Mano mentioned, and the local folks mentioned also. So you want to put some saguaros? Please, by all means. You want to put some additional trees? By all means, please do it. Okay. Make it pretty. Okay. Make it that we care. Okay. Not so much, you know, we want a piece of architecture that's going to be here in 50 years from now. Not the point, okay. They have enough architecture with Park Place. Okay, they're not happy with it. That's my point.
Ms. Tom?
Yes, Madam Chair, I just want clarification. Prop 407 was clear about what the purpose of the funding is for in terms of pathways, correct? And so it was passed by the voters. So it sounds like there's some kind of conflict in messaging. That's passed by the voters, but the community, there's a group of community members who are saying they don't want certain things. So I think there's two voices that are present in this decision. And I just wanted to make sure for clarity purposes that a proposition was passed by the voters in support of that.
Right. And so how many times have you met with the community on three different versions that you presented to them, or have you?
Oh, yeah. We developed those concepts specifically for the neighbors in response to their concerns. I believe we've met with them. I mean, the main advocate for not doing anything, I've spoken with easily 15 times. But I think we've had at least three neighborhood meetings with them, and we've had other public meetings where they were invited and attended. Yeah, I think we've had good consultation with them.
What kind of, makes me a little disconnect with this is the fact that this is a very narrow park. Okay, why, I mean, I understand the Prop 407, requirements, but is there something else we could put besides, this path to make it even, narrower than it already is? We need some green space. We don't need asphalt. We don't, we need something green, something that people can walk on and feel like a breath of fresh air. Because if they look a little further, okay. That's the message I've been given from those folks and those local folks.
Yep. Yeah, and your points are well taken. And I think we're sympathetic to that. I think on the flip side, Commissioner Dong mentioned, we have this larger project that's trying to connect some very popular bike routes. So, and sorry, I maybe should have started with that. So this is a 9-mile long urban greenway that connects the loop at the northern end down to the aviation greenway. And so there's a small group of neighbors in Loma Verde who don't like this idea. There's a large group of users throughout that are citywide that would benefit from the increased connectivity. And so this is an opportunity to use publicly owned land to get bikes and pedestrians off the street, which is something that I go to a lot of public meetings. One of the most consistent messages that we get about bicycling is, can you create a safe space for me where I'm not mixing with cars? This is an opportunity to do that in a pretty cost-effective way that we think is complementary to the park uses. And not everybody agrees with that. But this, I think the project is bigger than just this one neighborhood.
I have a question, because you just brought in a new element, which wasn't there before. So I'm not against a bike path, but did anybody ever consider putting the bike path smack against the existing park mall wall so as not to touch the integrity of the rest of the narrow Lower value plan that's left over, keep it green. And like I said, you want a bike path? Fine, click by the wall. Anybody think about it?
We did. I would say we didn't seriously consider using the park mall parking lot circulation as the bike path, and that was intentional. It's not a very pleasant place to ride a bike in the mall parking lot. It doesn't provide that sense of separation from traffic.
I think he's suggesting to push it up against the wall on the park
side. Oh, on the park side.
Yeah.
Yes, we did consider that. The neighbors didn't prefer that. They didn't want to see any impacts. There's also a technical thing going on with that. When the land was dedicated to the city of Tucson, they specified a 3-foot buffer area in between the wall and the park. So we couldn't put it directly on the wall. There'd have to be at least 3 feet, which we could do that. And, during design, that's something we could explore if the neighbors prefer that. But the message that I received from neighbors was, we don't want any impacts to the green space at all, no matter where you locate.
I'm sorry, we don't want impact?
No impacts to the green space. It doesn't matter where it's located. We don't want it, is what we heard. And that's a difficult, it's difficult for us to try to come up with a compromise when that's the sentiment. But we tried our best and we came up with some options, and we can come up with some more once we get into design, because we are committed to trying to mitigate any of the issues that the neighbors have. But like I said, there's competing interests.
And the point is that you know, no matter where you're going to put the bicycle lane, you're going to compromise, you know, some surface. Okay, so if you go, you know, to the outside of the park, okay, not only, you know, are you going to, you know, cut down the interest of the park and cut down the integrity, okay, of the green space, okay, but, you know, you're going to raise some other questions, like Manon said, like Kathy said, you know, there's various issues here. Now, if you have to leave, you know, some kind of buffer zone between the wall, the existing Park Place wall, more wall, and the bike path, would it be acceptable? I mean, can you put maybe some low impact trees against the wall so that the bicycle people will be happy? Because if you do something like this, okay, and maybe on the other side of the path, the same thing, you know, just something, you know, so that the people can say, well, we have a park. It's not just a bicycle run, okay. It's, you know, at the same token, we don't see Park Place for a second. This is great, okay. But, you know, all of a sudden you're restoring the idea of a park, not just a narrow piece of land that, you know, everybody can do whatever they want. Okay, a place where you can bring your kids. Okay, you don't have to worry about being squeezed between the road and bicycle path. You know, it's, to me, it would make more sense. But again, like I said, I don't know what difficulties, you know, you have to figure out, you know, something that would be closer to the wall if you must have it. If you can get the bicycle, you know, quite early out of the park, obviously it would be the best thing. But according to what you said, it's not really a solution, a possibility. So I think you need to work with the local people and what you have. And like I said, I know they're not going to like it even by the park wall wall, but it, you know, it's a compromise.
Yeah. Thank you.
So the other committee will make the decision.
Yes, they will decide whether to accept our staff recommendation or to direct us to do something different, to pursue one of these two options. And I don't know if there's a mechanism for this commission to give feedback or recommendation to the other commission. I don't know how that all works.
Well, today's item is a discussion.
Right.
Item.
We don't take action.
Okay.
Yeah. But you could bring it, if you wanted to, you could bring it for the next meeting.
April 20th.
So you, it's the same week.
Yeah.
And they meet Monday.
Oh.
Yeah. And we meet Wednesday. Great.
Yeah. Well, thank you for bringing us the information.
Sure. Yeah. And the other thing I'll say, too, is, you know, to Commissioner Roberts' point, I think there are future opportunities for this commission to weigh in once we get to the time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Park operations structure.
That is me, Madam Chair. Give me 1 second. So over the past couple months, we have been working through some, I'll say, structural changes to how we've organized our park operations team. And so we thought we'd be good to walk through what we're doing, why we're doing it. I'm giving you basically an abbreviated presentation that we did with staff about a month and a half ago, 2 months ago. I'm not going to do a couple of pages on the side. We'll get through it. That's fine.
Go ahead, Ben. Oh, there you go.
Yeah, it's just slow. This process started last summer as I became more involved in park operations, recognizing that we had a new superintendent there, Adrian Armijo, John Bonillas, the administrator, had only been here 2 years. We thought it was really important to go meet with all of our teams so they could get to know us, but we also wanted to take that as an opportunity to help them understand things that we were focusing in on and wanted them to focus in on over the next year so that we're all kind of working towards the same thing. And at the same time, we took the opportunity to ask them, you know, what are their challenges they're dealing with on a daily basis? you know, we can't address and fix challenges if we don't know what those are. So it was really just an opportunity to listen to them. It was the second half of those meetings. We did them in small groups of usually 6 to 8 people. There were 17 total meetings. It took much longer than we had originally thought it was going to. We thought we'd be able to knock this out in 4 weeks. That didn't happen. We intentionally did them in June and July in the afternoon because they were frontline park operations staff, getting them out of the heat in the afternoon. It's a good chance to do that. So it worked out really well. I think between John and Adrian and I, we probably had 50 pages of notes that we had to kind of sort through and figure out what we heard. And then thanks to ChatGPT and AI, it deciphered that down to kind of the 10 or 12 major topics that we heard from staff. So it was tools and equipment, fleet and vehicles, irrigation and water. So you're seeing kind of the big things that we heard from staff, like here's their biggest challenges. So John, Adrian, and I took a couple months to really think through this, develop an action plan on things that we could address right away and some things we did right away. We heard a lot from staff. I will say, like, I didn't expect things like they wanted a dead body policy. I was like, okay, have never even thought about we should have a policy that if you come across a body part, what do you do? So they got into a lot of details. I mean, it was a lot more than we expected, but it was good. They shared. They were not bashful by any stretch of the imagination. So we did a second round of meetings, end of September, early October, this time in much larger groups. We actually went through all of those categories, explained to them what we could do, what we'd already done, and what we were planning on doing going forward. And then we were quite frank, like, hey, there's certain things we can't do, we can't fix right now, and there are other things that we need to continue to figure out how we address those issues. Two of the most significant challenges we heard from staff were, you know, dealing with homelessness issues in the park and working alone, especially if you're going into parks where there's homelessness issues. So those were not two issues we could fix in the first 3 or 4 months. And we were just frank with them, like, hey, we don't have an answer for this. We got to continue to think about it. And after those October meetings, John, Adrian, Lara, and I continued to kind of talk through, you know, how do we address those two challenges? Because it wasn't easy. But we'll get to the outcomes. Just for perspective, how we were organized, I'm going to start in the top left. You know, we have 3 regions that that's how we structure our operations for maintenance purposes. 3 regions, each one of those regions has a supervisor. And then if you're working to the right, within those regions, we have 3 compounds. We have 3 compounds in the west, the central, and the east. Each one of those compounds has a park maintenance coordinator. That's what a PMC is. So that's kind of your frontline supervisor overseeing the frontline staff. The next box over, if you think about those 9 compounds, we have 51 groundskeepers reporting to those 9 compounds. So there's typically 5 or 6 groundkeepers reporting to a work site. The rest of how we're organized is we have a B shift that works like 2 to 10:30. We have 2 coordinators in that, 4 groundskeepers. Then going to the bottom left, remember to look here and not there because the mouse is not the same. We have a sports maintenance team that just strictly focuses on maintaining the 130, 140 ball fields we have in the park system. They have a supervisor, 3 coordinators, 12 groundskeepers. Then we have a specialized crew that does like heavy equipment with a supervisor, 2 coordinators, and 7 trade specialists. Then we have a crew that is solely focused on irrigation, drinking fountains, anything water related with a supervisor, 2 plumbers, and 7 irrigators. Then we have an electrician, supervisor, an electrician, and a trades helper. So that's pretty much everybody we have, almost everybody we have, the park operations side of the house.
You don't have any more tree trimmers?
We have not had any tree trimmers since like 2014, 2015. We contracted all that out.
So I think what happened is they transferred over to GS. I think that's what I heard back with the shuffled economic downturn. So, yeah. No more.
So this kind of gives you an overview. We actually had then 114 employees. Everybody I just went through, plus the planner schedule and our shops crew, who are really the backbone of our park maintenance function. seems like a lot, but when you start breaking them down to all the different functions, it's not a lot. Now you take that down to the